Presley had every intention of switching to Habakkuk and to use Yahweh's words to assail Paul at this point, because this is going to be a program whose length is going to be cut to 2 hours. We're going to play a rerun of the first hour and the third hour so that I can go play golf with my visiting son. Now, that may not sound like a very good excuse, but when you consider how few days I take off a year and the fact that I'm paid nothing for doing this, it is genuinely a service, because I am not compensated for it. And I don't get all that much time with my son, and he lives 1,500 miles away. We are going to go spend late morning hours and early afternoon together. So I plan to switch to questioning Paul, but I do have to share an event that's going on in the world. We have another plane that has disappeared in the skies surrounding Malaysia and Indonesia. This one, an Indonesian plane. And it is just vanished. Now, when you have one plane that mysteriously vanishes, and you've got Putin preoccupied doing all sorts of other stuff, and you really can't pin the tail on him, you know, you got a ripe environment for conspiracy. But then when you have a second plane from the same part of the world that also mysteriously disappears without any call from the cockpit saying, we have a problem, then I think you have a conspiracy. So I was asking Scott what he thought might be the case, and it was his opinion that with the research conclusion that with the magnetic poles changing, now the Bermuda Triangle is over Malaysia and Indonesia. To which I said, well, it's probably by design, since, as he said, since we're becoming good friends now with the Cubans, we wanted to move the Bermuda Triangle. The best way to do that was to redirect the HAARP array in Alaska, so that rather than influencing the magnetic and weather patterns over the northern hemisphere, it actually sucks in aircraft over the southern hemisphere. That is our theory.
It was with 10 seconds of thought, and I mean research.
Well, that's more thought and research than most people are going to put into it.
So it's well backed up. It just makes sense. The Bermuda Triangle is now the Malaysian Triangle.
We're laughing. Obviously, there's 150 people aboard that airplane who are most likely gone, and that's a sad state of affairs. But obviously there's nothing that we can say or do that's going to bring them back. And quite honestly, we do have a problem. There is a serious problem with the ability of Malaysians and Indonesian Muslims to maintain, fly, and track aircraft. And you just can't have this happen twice in the same part of the world under the same set of circumstances and not suspect a problem. So if I were you, my advice, in all seriousness, is don't even think of going to Indonesia or to Malaysia or flying one of their aircraft. Now, we know that Muslims don't make aircraft. This one was an Airbus. The previous aircraft was a Boeing 777. And that those are fine airplanes. They're well designed. The engines are highly technical. They were made in Europe and the United States. There's nothing wrong with the aircraft. But it's people that maintain aircraft. It's people that control aircraft. It's people that manage all of this process. And there's something desperately wrong with Muslims. And so if I were you, I just wouldn't go to that part of the world. Now, we're going to pick up the story of, unless, Scott, you have something you'd like to contribute to your deep analysis and insights as to the Air Asia flight.
No, I have no more to contribute. I've done all I can at this point.
All right, to make a complete mockery of a show that was serious up to this point. Now, my fault entirely.
Yeah, I was going to say, you asked my opinion. You asked me.
Yeah, I was trying to decide whether or not this was a topic we should bring up, and wasn't going to do it until I was motivated by sharing your insights. There is someone's insights worth sharing. That happens to be Yao's. We have considered the first four statements that he has made in Chavauk, which means embrace this, changed to Habakkuk 2:5. For those through 1 through 4, and we had begun to consider 5 as our program wound down last week. Now I'm going to reprise 1 through 2:1 through 2:4 for you so that we're up to speed in the context, and then move on to what God has to say. In my opinion, not that my opinion matters, but perhaps I should say it is my conclusion, which might matter a little more since I spend a lot of time considering this material. This may be the single most important and relevant prophecy Yahweh ever uttered. And I say that because it affects the souls of more people than any other prophecy. Now, that being the case, if it is true, and it's my reasoned conclusion after diligent study, that this is the single most important prophecy God ever made. And that's saying a lot, since he predicted the arrival of the Messiah, but he predicted that so many times and in so many ways. And he was there doing a something that has really only influenced thousands of people. I mean, there are only thousands of people amongst the billions who have come this way who are members of the covenant, according to Yahweh. And so, while what Yahweh predicted in terms of his arrival and fulfillment of Pesach, Matzah, Vekodim, and Shavua, and his future fulfillment of Teruah and arrival on Yom Kippurim and honoring the promise of Sukkah are far more magnificent, are far more important. It's important to a much smaller group of people, to far fewer souls than this prophecy. And that's really the only one that really matters. And I mean, it's the number of souls that it influences. That is, by the way, the criterion that I'm using here. I mean, I'm going to tell you that Yahweh's prediction of his fulfillment in year 4000 Yah, 33 CE in our Roman Catholic pagan calendars, of Passover, Matzah, Bukudim, and Shavuah, and his eyewitness accounts found of them in Yashaya 53, Psalm 22, and 88. Well, that means more to me and to most of those listening to this program who are participants in Yahweh's covenant in terms of a prophecy influencing the maximum number of lives, the most souls, is this one in Chavo, because there's only tens of thousands of us who have been positively influenced by what he has done versus billions upon billions upon billions of souls that have been hoodwinked by Christianity because they didn't pay attention to this prophecy. So, and to a large degree, without Christianity, there probably is no Islam. There may not even be a rabbinic Judaism that currently exists. The frauds perpetrated by Christianity gave opportunity for those religions to rise. Had Christianity never been conceived, had Paul never written his letters, had Yosha's words and deeds been considered in the light of the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, that he'd been recognized as Yosha, as Yahweh, saving us, these other religions would have been impossible. And so there is really nothing that has influenced more people than their unwillingness to consider what is in this Chavauk prophecy. Now, you might say, if you wanted to play devil's advocate, and I use that term not really speaking to the devil, but of the concept, you might say that Yahweh's prophecies regarding the Magog War and the last days, where a quarter of the world's population dies, followed by a third of those who remain, half of the world's population, which would be 3.5 billion people, are going to die during tribulation, that you might say, well, that is a prophecy that affects more people. But no, not really. There are probably 2.5-3 billion Christians on the planet today. And if you go back in time to almost 2,000 years ago when Paul penned these poison letters, you would have had more souls destroyed by Pauline doctrine, by Christianity, than are going to succumb during the tribulation. And many of those that succumb are going to succumb because they are Christians and they chose not to engage in the covenant. They were misled. I received an amazing email in this regard this morning. Before I go into this, I do want to share a little bit of it with you. Let me see if I can find it here quickly. It was written by an individual who wanted to communicate the fact that it's impossible to prevail with a religious person. That if a person is religious, you aren't going to effectively reach them. And this is the comment I made. This person wrote a loved one, and he said in response to this person quoting a very important Torah passage. The individual quoted the Torah passage, in fact, quoted really throughout the prophets, but quoted the Torah passage that says that the Torah is the source of restoration of our souls. And understanding the Torah was easy for those who were open-minded. And this person said that discussing Old Testament passages as if they were relevant today is pointless and, more important, irrelevant to me. I am a Catholic. Yes, so this Roman Catholic said, discussing Old Testament passages as if they have relevance today is pointless and, more importantly, irrelevant to me. I am a Catholic. He wanted to say, my salvation comes from Jesus Christ, a person whose name he does not know. Of course, he's using Christ as a last name. Both are wrong, Jesus and Christ. And therefore, he has no salvation. He says, he founded my church. No, he didn't. He doesn't have a church. Never uttered a word even remotely akin to church, much less founding one. He left it in good hands. The popes of the Roman Catholic Church are some of the most vile people who have ever polluted this planet. It is a sad situation, but the reality is those poisoned by religion, like this fellow, will disregard Old Testament passages. They have them as part of their Holy Bible. They claim they were inspired by God. They claim that it's the same God that is responsible for creating their religion. And in the same breath, they'll refer to their God as Jesus Christ as opposed to Yahweh. In fact, they can't even use Yahweh's name. And they wholly disassociate their Jesus Christ from those irrelevant Old Testament passages. And if there is no connection between the two, then he is irrelevant. Then he's not God. But they're not capable of making that distinction. You can't go from saying that the Torah, prophets, and Psalms are irrelevant and that I'm saved by a Jesus Christ. Because Yahusha, once you get his name right, the Messiah, is only relevant if the very testimony that he emerged out of, that he referenced, that he affirmed, is valid. You can't say that you were saved by Jesus Christ when he told you that every letter and every stroke that comprises every letter of the Torah and prophets were going to endure forever, and that he did not come to invalidate them and then claim you are saved by him, even though everything that he said was going to endure that was providing your salvation, and that he was not going to annul, is now pointless and irrelevant to you. To make those two statements, one sentence to the next, demonstrates my point, that a religious person is irrational. They're incapable of reasoned thought. They cannot make a sound conclusion. They're incapable of thinking logically. And wholly and completely incapable of it. Clueless as to who God is, clueless as to what he did. And this idea that someone named Jesus, of which there was no one in the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th century named Jesus. BCE or CE. That the first Jesus didn't exist until the 17th century. Christ, as in a last name, when there is no basis for that anywhere, and no association of any kind with the individual. That individual established a thing called a church, when in fact, church is a pagan name. It's a wholesale replacement of the Greek text, which was ecclesia, which means call out, which was itself a translation of what he said when he spoke of the mikra, the invitations to be called out. He established the invitations to be called out. That's what he meant when he said that he came to fulfill the Torah, not annul it. The Torah's primary promise is its invitations to call us out so that we can engage in the covenant, so that we can endure forever, so that we can be part of a relationship called the covenant with Yahweh. And it is those mikrei that he established, speaking Hebrew, to a Hebrew audience. And yet, even when it was translated reasonably into Greek as ecclesia, from mikre, invitations to be called out and to meet, translated reasonably as ecclesia, to be called out, his church replaced that with church, a pagan name of a pagan sun goddess, to create a lie. And it truly is astonishing how stupid people have become. And here's this fellow writing, he says, I'm a Catholic, and the Old Testament is pointless and irrelevant to me. It has no meaning today. No. So why is it in the Roman Catholic Bible? If it has absolutely no meaning, if it's totally pointless, totally irrelevant today, why even carry it around? Why can you say, how do you go about saying that Jesus Christ is my Savior and he established the church, when in fact the individual, whose proper name is Yahusha, whose proper title is Messiah, who you don't know their name, you don't know their title, said exactly the opposite. Established himself on the bedrock of the Torah, the prophets and the Psalms, affirmed them. Said they're the only thing that mattered. Every time he was asked a question, he says, why do you ask me this question? Why don't you read the Torah, the prophets, the Psalms? What do they say? That's what matters. If he didn't walk out of the pages of the Torah, he's irrelevant. If he isn't the living embodiment of the Torah, then he's a liar. And if you listen to what he said wholly and totally affirms the ongoing and enduring relevance of the Torah, the prophets, and the Psalms. this stupidity of Christianity to disassociate itself from the Torah, prophets, and Psalms, and then latch on to an individual who they do not know, whose testimony and whose acts they completely and totally reject and corrupt, to pretend that is their salvation. I mean, it's moronic. Oh, pity Catholics. I mean, Christians, you're stupid. You're not thinking. I can't change that. This man that penned those words, way too far gone to ever be reached with evidence and reason. He has put his faith in one of the most corrupt institutions in human history, maybe the most counterproductive institution in all of human history, the Roman Catholic Church. And when Yahweh, God's own testimony, is cited to refute the evil that is Roman Catholicism, he's going to believe his church and reject God as irrelevant. Now, how do you deal with that? God himself couldn't save that man. Can't do it. Won't do it. And isn't interested in doing it. But that's the nature of religion. Someone that far gone, their iniquity is full. They're like the diseased host in the promised land that Yahweh said, you know, you need to get rid of these poisoned individuals before they ruin my home and kill my children. That's what this Roman Catholic is. That's why there'll be so much carnage over the next 15 to 20 years as we move into and through the tribulation. You can't help them. They aren't worth helping. So here's Yahweh's testimony in Chabaouk, the most important prophetic testimony of all time. It tickles me to know also how this fits Yahweh's overall mindset, his attitude towards things. It's the prophecy that influences more souls than any other in the totality of his Torah, prophets, and Psalms. More people are influenced by not having paid attention to this prophecy than anything else that Yahweh ever said. And yet he said it through the most minor of minor prophets. The most massively influential statement that Yahweh ever made in terms of the number of souls who are influenced by it was issued through a prophet that very few people even know. In fact, if you were to ask the Roman Catholic about Chabaouk, he'd say, what? Even if you were to give him the Roman Catholic nomenclature Habakkuk, he wouldn't even know that it was part of the Bible that he lugs around with, where three-quarters of it is pointless and irrelevant. Well, here is Yahweh's own testimony in this regard. Upon my requirements and responsibilities, I have decided I will literally and continuously stand. Period. Full stop. Continuously. Literally. What are his responsibilities? To fulfill Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, Shavuah, Teruah, Kippurim, Sukkah. Those are the invitations to meet with him. There are the parties that he has invited us to. Those are his responsibilities. Beyond that, and as part of those responsibilities, he has committed to provide the benefits of the covenant. Eternal life, perfection, adoption, empowerment, enrichment. He has also promised to reconcile his relationship with Yahudah and Yisrael, which he will fulfill on Sukkah. He has promised that he will camp out for all time with his children, a promise fulfilled by Sukkah. Those are his responsibilities. On his requirements, they are fivefold. That we walk away from our country, from patriotism, from politics, from our culture, and from religion. We walk away from all things associated with Babylon, and there is no more Babylonian influence on our planet today than Roman Catholicism. It is the most literal embodiment of every disease that affected Babylon. Walk away from Babylon. We need to trust and rely on Yahweh. That is a requirement of participating in the covenant. not rely on a Jesus or a Christ or a church or anything Roman, or most certainly not anything Catholic. To rely and to trust Yahweh, a God that the religious do not know. To walk to Him and become perfect, there's only one path that is outlined in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. There's only one path that is associated with the covenant. There's only one path to salvation ever uttered by Yahweh. There's only one means to salvation ever acted upon and fulfilled by Yahusha. It is that path that passes through the doorway of Passover, over the threshold of unyeasted bread, providing us with our adoption papers on firstborn children, enriching us with His Torah teaching, empowering us with His Spirit on the promise of seven, so that we, as troubadours, as those who issue a warning and shout out the good news, can reach the maximum number of people whose ears and minds are open on trumpets, leading to the reconciliation of His family, of the chosen people, of Yisrael and Yahuda, not of any pagan or Gentile church, so that those of us who have embraced the covenant can camp out with Him for all time. That is the path that we walk to Yahweh to become perfect, that we observe, closely examine, and carefully consider the terms and conditions of this, the covenant, and that as parents we circumcise our sons on the eighth day. Those are the requirements. And He says, I have decided I will literally and continuously stand. God isn't going to vary. And I will choose to always stand and present myself upon that which protects and fortifies. So who was the one who took the stand? Who presented Himself upon the means to protect us, to fortify us? Well, that is why Yahusha means Yahweh saves. Our Savior is not Jesus Christ. It isn't even Yahusha. It is Yahweh Himself. At least for those who actually are saved. So then, I will be on the lookout in order to see what He, masculine, singular, will say about me. But then, how can I be expected to change my attitude, my thinking, or my response, my disapproving rebuke? Well, Yahweh was already just established in the first statement exactly where He's going to stand, what He's going to do, what He's going to accept. And He says, so I'm going to be on the lookout for what this lone individual is going to say about me. And everything Paul wrote was what he claimed to say about God. He claimed that God had empowered him, had authorized him, had picked him from the womb to be His lone spokesperson, the only person to speak to the Gentiles about Him. And what did he say about God? The opposite of what God just said here. And so, Yahweh was saying, so you should not be surprised. I'm not going to change my mind. I'm not changing my attitude. This notion that I've disregarded everything that I've said before and I'm starting with an entirely different plan with an entirely different person, which requires an entirely different approach and different thinking and a different response. Pauline doctrine. Salvation through faith in the gospel of grace. Participation in the Catholic Church. He's saying, don't think I'm going to change my attitude, my thinking, or my response. And be aware of my disapproval and rebuke of that hideous institution called a church, of that hideous lie called Christianity. This is the most important prophecy ever uttered in the sense of the number of people that it influences. Then Yahweh answered, approaching me, and He said, write this revelation and then expound upon and reiterate it using letters upon writing tablets so that by reciting this, he might run and go away. Yahweh is into written communication. He wrote His Torah. He wrote His 10 statements, etching his communications in stone. He's into written communication because it endures, because it has a record that shows that it does not change. Write this revelation and then expound on it and reiterate it using letters. That is really what we are focused on in doing in this program, expounding on what Yahweh said. If you read Yada Yah, if you read Introduction to God, even if you read the Torah, Prophet, and Psalm passages cited to refute Pauline doctrine in questioning Paul, you'll find that all of them are expounded upon. To expound on what the tenses and the subjugations and the stems and the conjugations and the moods offer in terms of insights. What the words amplified mean to us. All of this is expounded upon, reiterated, so that we can think about it, so we can make the necessary connections and understand it because of the importance of what is being communicated. Write it down, he said, and it was written down for us, so that by reciting this, he might run. When you cite the truth, evil flees. Where Yahweh is encouraging us to recite what was written down, so that he might flee, so that he might go away, is really brilliant. That's what makes Yahweh's Torah, Prophets, and Psalms relevant today. That's the point today, is that when we recite it, evil flees. And any place where this is recited and expounded upon, there is no hope for, no possibility for the ongoing infection of Pauline doctrine. Those who are willing to listen to what Yahweh said with an open mind will flee Paul, will flee Christianity. It's the only reasoned and rational approach. And so this is Yahweh's plan. You want to influence the world positively, the world around you. You want to influence your own soul positively. Then recite and expound upon Yahweh's prophetic testimony, just as we're doing right here. When we do that, the most infamous forms of evil, man's most malignant diatribes and doctrines, like Pauline Christianity, they all go away. That is the purpose of all of this, is that they go away. As we continue, still indeed, this revelation from God is for the Moed appointed meeting times. It provides a witness to and speaks, pouring out evidence in the end. The extended period of time required for this question to be resolved shall not prove it false. Expect him in this regard. Because indeed, he will absolutely come, neither being delayed nor lingering. There's only one individual who meets this requirement. One individual who came during the fulfillment of the Moed appointed meeting times. The fourth millennia of human history. 4,000 years after Adam and Chawa were expelled from the garden. The means to re-enter the garden was enabled by the greater light on the fourth day of creation, year 4000 Yah, 33 CE on our Roman pagan calendars, when Yosha fulfilled the Moed, the Pesach, Matzah, Bukurim, and Shabuah. That is the time that Paul, known as Saul at the time, was training to be a rabbi in Jerusalem. That is the time that this prophecy was going to be fulfilled. What is so interesting, with six being the number of man, that 666, the number associated with the Antichrist, with the Torahless one, three sixes, corruption of humankind. Religion is the means to that corruption, and the adversary's influence among them. Three sixes. 660 years. 666 years transpired from the time that Yahweh revealed this prophecy through Chabaouk to the time that Paul wrote his first letter, that to the Galatians called Galatians. 666 years. Yes, indeed. This speaks, pouring out evidence, as a revelation for God. It's for the time of the appointed meetings, the Moed. This extended period of time, 666 years for this question to be resolved, shall not prove it false. Even the question is relevant, and that Shaul means to question him. Expect him, singular, masculine, a single individual in this regard, because he will absolutely come, neither being delayed nor lingering. And boy, did he come with full force. This is the story that Yahweh has presented for us, future history. A revelation from the very God whose every word is relevant, pertinent in our lives and throughout time, told us precisely when this lone individual would appear, and that for the questions of him to regarding him to be resolved, and that nothing Yahweh has said in this regard shall be proven false. Pay attention. He will be puffed up with false pride. His head will swell, and he will become haughty and arrogant, presumptuous, heedless of the truth. And boy, no one who ever attempted to speak for, ever claimed to speak for God, had the ego of Paul. Even Muhammad wasn't as egotistical and arrogant as Shaul. So then, through trust and reliance, those who are righteous and vindicated shall live. This is the contrast between religious faith, which kills, and a trust of reliance upon what Yahweh has said that provides vindication and life that we will explore at this time tomorrow. May Yahweh bless. Talk to you tomorrow.